This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 89.
There's a lot of good intercepts in this world, but a lot of them are quite deep. And so they're difficult to get to. So with our RPM, our drill intercept, our headline drill intercept there was 132 meters at 10 grams per ton.
If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Cavagione. Let's get to today's episode. Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today's guest is Christopher Gertison, and Chris is the CEO of Nova Minerals. It's a public company. He's an impressive Australian minerals explorer and developer that focuses on gold and lithium projects globally. Nova Minerals is also known for its flagship 6.2 million ounces Estelle Gold Project, a large-scale gold resource just north of Anchorage that houses an incredible 6.2 million ounces. So for there, 4.7 million ounces of contained gold called Corbel Main. So numbers-wise, his site is underpinned by 40,000 meters of new drilling with 48 diamond core holes completed since 2019, Corbel Main, the site has seen an increase of over 2 million ounces, bringing Corbel Main itself to 4.7 million ounces, but a total that he's managing here of 6.2 million ounces. So Chris, what a background. You're doing some big things, stuff I don't really know too much about, and I want to learn more about you and what you're doing. So I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. Welcome to the show.
Absolutely, Mike. Great to be with you. And I'm glad to be here and educate you a bit about what I do. And, you know, everybody knows a little bit of something and a lot about something else. And This just happens to be my forte. So you asked about my background a little bit. I'm an economic geologist. I'm actually from Alaska, which is in the Estelle Gold Project right here in my backyard. I started my career up here working on these very large intrusive related gold systems, we call them. I spent a lot of time down in Nevada, Barrick, Newmont, huge bulk mineable gold deposit, company maker style deposits down there. And then I spent a lot of time in Australia. And this is how the Australian connection comes in. You mentioned Nova Minerals is actually Australia domiciled, even though our flagship project is here in Alaska. I spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia, Laos, Thailand, Indonesia. And my specialty has really become taking resource stage projects. A project, if you think of it on a continuum, you have the early exploration greenfields, then you start to get a bit of a few results and start to define some gold. And then that middle period on the timeline would be what we call a resource or resource development project. And then that'll move into an actual mining project or a mine with actual production. And so we're at that resource development stage now. And so now I've come full circle and I'm back in Alaska, right here in my hometown. What a blessing is that right here with my whole extended family after traipsing around the world doing this for 25 years. And right here in my backyard is the Estelle Gold Project. So you mentioned there's a lot of numbers flying around there. Let me summarize. So we really started our work in earnest here in 2019 with our first drilling program. And with our maiden resource, came back above and beyond even what we expected. Our maiden resource was 2.5 million ounces at the Corbel Main deposit. And so since that time, about two years later, we've increased the Corbel Main resource to 4.7 million ounces. And we've also now have an additional deposit on our 324 square kilometer claim block, and it's 20 miles along mineralized strike to the south, and that's our RPM deposit. And we've drilled some there now, and we've defined 1.5 million ounces there. And so those two combined, our global resource total for the entire project is 6.2 million ounces. And so what are we doing? We're a gold company. Right now, we're on the path to production, fast tracking the first thing to do, of course, is just increase these ounces. This type of resource growth expansion in the ounces like this, this is, if not unique, certainly very rare, especially in the world today. It's very rare to find very large gold deposits anymore. And so that's our mission right now. We're a year-round operation. We just keep drilling, keep expanding. In fact, there's an exciting milestone coming up here in the next couple of weeks. We're going to come out with another resource update on our Corbel main deposit, and we expect that 6.2 million ounces to increase again. And this is just one small step to much bigger things. We think that Corbel main alone is a 10 million ounce whopper. And that's not uncommon in our neighborhood. We're in the Tintina Gold Province in Alaska. This is one of the most prolific belts in recent times, over 220 million ounces of documented gold discoveries and now production in recent times. And this is where the historic gold rushes were, the things you've heard about, the Klondike and all these kind of things. This is where it's at. Now we know where all that gold came from. And 10 million ounce plus projects are not uncommon. There's a numerous other ones. Kinross, Fort Knox up there in Fairbanks. Victoria Gold on the Yukon side over there recently started production. Barrick Nova Gold just to the west of us. And that's a 40 million ounce project. And yeah, it's absolutely, you know, our license plate is the last frontier. And that's for many things, but also for very large behemoth size gold deposits. And that's what we're on to here at Estelle.
That's truly fascinating. And like I said, before we started recording, one of the things I was really excited about talking to you about today is because I don't know too much about mineral investing or just mining for gold and things like that. So when this opportunity to interview you came up, I was like, oh, this will be very interesting. And maybe I could learn something about what this is all about and how lucrative this could be for somebody who's interested in investing in something like this. So now you said the way it works is you start off, you said it's greenfields, right? Then to the resourcing stage and then to actual mining. So you're still in like the resourcing stage. Now, does that mean this is you're finding the deposits right now? And then the next step from this is after you identify all of it, that's going to be when you start mining.
That is correct. So we're at the resource development stage. So we've already found two deposits where we actually have resources on. That's those numbers of the 6.2 million ounces. But those are only two. We have 324 square kilometers of claims here. And so those are only 15 known prospects across our claim block. Okay. And in addition to advancing these resource projects with drilling every year, we also do, recon exploration. It's what that requires when you're in kind of virgin country out here. It doesn't require any complex, deep searching exploration techniques. It's old school, putting geologists on the ground, boots on the ground, kicking rocks. And every year they go out and do that. And we just made this year, we made two more significant discoveries. And that would be the Train Shoeshine Prospect, which is another one of these very large intrusive related gold systems. And we have to drill that now as we progress. And also the Stony Prospect. We discovered that this year as well. And this one's quite interesting. It adds a whole new dimension to the Estelle Gold Project because it's a polymetallic vein system. It's now gold, silver, and copper. And so it brings in a whole different kind of investor. We've been mainly focused on gold, but we're finding gold, silver, and copper now. And the grades are just exceptional. You know, just a note on grades. I mentioned this RPM deposit that we've just started drilling this year and came out with our 1.5 million ounce maiden resource. When your investors look at data, you'll see drill intercepts reported all the time. You'll see a drill intercept. There's a few, in simplistic terms, if you're just looking at it, what do these drill intercepts mean? So there's a number of boxes you want to check. So it's basically, you look at the thickness of the mineralization, right? You look at the grade of the mineralization, and you look at the depth of the mineralization. So how far is it from surface? There's a lot of good intercepts in this world, but a lot of them are quite deep. And so they're difficult to get to. So with our RPM, our headline drill intercept there was 132 meters at 10 grams per ton. Okay. And so to put that in perspective, what does that mean for people that perhaps are looking at this for the first time? This is one of the top 10 intercepts in the last 10 years in the world. One of the top 30 intercepts in the history of the world. 132 meters at 10 grams per ton. Anything over 50 meters at, you can look at it in gram meters as well. You multiply the thickness times the grade. And so any kind of gram meters that is over about 150, 200, anything over that is just pretty exceptional. And then from that, you look at how far it is from surface. So at RPM, it's right on the surface. And if you multiply 132 by 10, that's 1300, that's 1300 gram meters. So you can see how exceptional this particular result is. And being on the surface, there's a lot of cost when you come to mining. And so being on the surface, you can mine it by open pit methods rather than having to go under. And so underground is always more expanded. Open pit is the preferred method if you can. And that's what we have in all our deposits and what we're looking for right now at the Estelle Gold Project. When people think of gold mining, you know, just to talk about gold mining, you see these shows on TV like Gold Rush. I love that show. Our buddy Parker Schnabel going out there. And so what they're doing is placer mining, right? And generally placer mines, they're kind of mom and pop operations or like very few, you know, public listed companies that are that. They're usually quite small and contained. And so what placer mining is, we're Nova Minerals, we're after hard rock. We're after the source where the gold comes from. So then that gets eroded over geologic time, and then it gets deposited in the valleys and the streams. And that's what the placer miner goes after. And there's a bit more hit and miss involved with placer mining. It's difficult to estimate exactly what you got. There's some method. You can do some pits around and estimate, but it's more difficult because it's not in situ anymore. You don't have the same geological controls. So you just basically are looking for places where gravity will catch it. That's why they're always looking for the bedrock. They're always looking for the bedrock. And so you just go for it. And some years, some seasons, they got a great season. Some seasons, they don't. Whereas when you come in hard rock mine, you're talking about a decade of work of drilling and data collection and then estimating and modeling using geostatistical techniques. So when you come to mine it, it's a much bigger capital investment, hundreds of millions to some of these projects are billions of dollars. And that, so you want to know exactly what's there. And you have this thing planned out all the years in advance. And so it's a lot more, there's a lot more time and investment. But then, of course, it's always the reward, the risk reward. A lot more goes into it, time and money. But then the reward is much greater at the end of the day, potentially.
Right on. There's so much to take away. I got some notes here because this is a lot of stuff. So when you say that you have found 15 prospects, so a prospect is an area that you've identified that has potential resource in it, like a mineral resource, is that right? Or is just it has the potential to have it?
Yeah, so potential is the operative word there. Basically, the geologists have been on the ground. They see the right geologic features, be it veining, the right type of mineralogy. A lot of our gold is associated with a mineral called arsenopyrite or different sulfide type minerals, pyrite, fool's gold, as they call it. Certain mineralogy, certain type of minerals and faulting and fracturing and structural features in the rock that the geologist goes, we need to get back here and we need to check this out again, prospect. And they've taken some samples and we've sent those to the lab and we're getting anomalous gold. But you don't actually have a resource as such until you drill it. And you have, you know, a kind of a grid pattern or several drill holes that you can then estimate some type of resource like your tons. And you can get a volume based on because the surface, if you're just doing exploration, it's just on the, you don't know how deep it would go. Whereas when you drill, then you have another dimension there, right? And so you can calculate a volume and then use your data, your assay data to estimate the grade inside that volume. And so now you have your tons and your grade, which you can then, which then calculates your ounces. So that's how you get a resource.
Okay.
Generally requires drilling.
So I think I'm putting two and two together here on how that works, at least on the surface, because I know that you can go so much more in depth into this. And it's almost like a play on words too, right? Because here I am scratching the surface, but you need to go a little more in depth to hit the gold.
Don't get me started. You can't shut me up.
It's all good.
I mentioned 15 known prospects. Those are the ones we actually know when we've been on the ground. But in addition to that, as you fly from Corbell right up to on the north of our claims down to RPM to the south, 20-mile mineralized strike length. It's like a mineralized intrusive corridor through there. And as you fly over that area, not much vegetation, you can look down and there's just numerous color anomalies, like big red zones where the sulfides are like a rust. Rusty zones have rusted that are just screaming back at you. These are like unnamed, unknown prospects. We've never been on the ground in those spots. And so those are just littered with those. It's like a kid in a candy store out there, Mike.
Yeah. So the ground that's oxidized like that, so it's got the rust on the top, that's like a telltale sign. There's metal here, right? So that's an area that you would want to prospect and check out.
Right. So good early indicator.
Yeah, makes sense.
Easy visual indicator, right? That's the first thing. Yeah, absolutely. You go to those first.
Yeah. Just like in any type of investment, you're looking for those different indicators as you're going into it. Now, you said the stony prospect that you guys found, that this had, it was like the trifecta, right? It had gold, silver, and copper. And that's not something that you were strictly focused on gold, but now finding a prospect that has silver and copper, what does that change for you when it comes to like how you're going to, I guess, mine it in the future?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, so it's a pretty exciting prospect. The main Stony vein, we can trace over 4 kilometers, 300 meters in vertical extent through the hills there, and we see it up to 10 to 12 meters thick in certain spots. And then on either side in parallel, we see more of these veins sticking up through the cover. So it looks like a polymetallic stacked vein system. And the way it differs is, so the processing to extract polymetallic would be different, right? So when we produce gold in these intrusive related gold system, basically the process would produce gold bars or doré bars, like impure gold bars that you'd then send to a refinery and have them purify it to 99.99 to 49 gold and things like that. And it'll have a little bit of silver, a little bit of copper, a few impurities in it. But although our ore is pretty clean there at Corbel and RPM. But when you're dealing with polymetallics, generally, when you're not just focused on gold and you have these other co-products, they're not just byproducts. So basically a byproduct, you don't really care. If it comes at the end, great, I got it. But you're not concentrating the processing. The flow sheet is not designed to capture it necessarily. But when you're dealing with significant amounts of gold, copper, and silver, then you want to try to capture it. This is a co-product. It's you've economically modeled to be able to capture that. And generally what you do in those situations is you produce a concentrate. So you don't go all the way down to the bars. And to produce a concentrate, the process will be different. It'll be a different type of plant, a bit different type of factory to process it. That's how it differs, that it'll be a totally different plant. You won't process it through the same plant. So now you're talking almost like different, like a standalone project, right? So it's a kind of, it'll go off on its own kind of path to look at that project as its own standalone project now. But you see how lucrative copper is right now. I think it's around $4.30 a pound or something like that. That's pretty good. Very close by to us, just adjacent to us, there's a very large porphyry. It's called a porphyry copper gold project. It's another company. And so we know there's copper in the area, so we might actually start to find more of these things.
Awesome. You were explaining earlier about the thickness and the grade, right? So with these drill intercepts. So I guess it's pretty cut and dry. Like when you say drill intercept, that's where you drill to where you intercept the actual mineral. And then it's graded based on the qualities based on, or not the quality, but the project itself, you work on it based off the thickness, grade, and depth. So how far down do you have to go before you're hitting this resource? And you're saying that some of the ones that you've found recently, like you don't even have to go that far down. But what's the difference between this underground versus open pit? You were describing it, but like what is open pit? Like underground, self-explanatory, I understand that's underground. But what's open pit?
So it'll be right on the surface.
Okay.
Right? It'll be or very close to the surface anyway. And so you basically just mine a big hole in the ground.
No? So you don't even have to drill. You're just digging at that point.
There's a process. So you've drilled it out. You've done your resource drilling. You have a resource model there. And then when you come to mine it, generally what they do in this type of a deposit is you'd go, because it's hard rock, you'd go and you'd have to blast it. And so as you're mining, you'll have blast patterns, blast areas, and you'll generally sample those blast holes, because those blast holes might only be, I don't know, 2 to 5 meters apart, depending on the rock, how well the rock breaks up, 2 to 5 meters apart. And you'll sample those. And so you'll get much more higher resolution on the data. You can sample those, get assays on those. You'd have an on-site assay lab at that stage. And then based on that data, you can block out, okay, this is high grade. This is a high grade block inside here. And there's some low grade. And this is maybe some waste over here. And then you blast it. And then the surveyors would come and mark that out, what you call in high grade based on the blast hole data. And then the excavators come in and just start digging it up, putting in trucks and taking it to the correct. The high grade would go straight to the mill. The low grade might go to a stockpile at that stage. Waste would go to either a waste dump, or if you're still constructing roads and different things, you'd use it as construction material. And so it's basically you're just digging a hole from the surface into the ground. And you just look at it from the surface and it's just a big hole in the ground. Now, underground, you actually, so a lot of projects actually start open pit. And then they'll, at the end, the pit will stop, but the gold will still keep going at depth. But it's not economic to open the pit up further, because you don't want to make the pit bigger, because you'll be taking out way too much waste to get down there. At some point, it's what's called the strip ratio. It's a very important parameter in mining. It's the waste to ore ratio. And so if you're just starting to mine way too much waste just to get down to that gold at the bottom, at some point it becomes uneconomic. And so a lot of pits, if the gold keeps going at good grades, you'll put in an adit. So you'll just put a tunnel. You'll start tunneling down on it. You'll start tunneling down. So you're not mining everything. You're just tunneling down, get to the, and there's different mining methods, whether different words you might hear, open stope and things like that. Those are just different block caving, different mining methods. And you just kind of tunnel and kind of spiral around. You get back to the ore body, mine as much as you can, and then you go down. And yeah, so you just keep going. You're tunneling down into the ground, basically. And it's a much more expensive way to mine, because you have to have ventilation, and it's much more dangerous, and the safety aspects of it. And it's just, and you don't have as much flexibility as you do in an open pit. In an open pit, you can just move here, move there. When you're underground, it's very costly to start tunneling like that. You know, you got to put all your stabilization into your tunnels and all these kind of things. So it's a different kind of mining. But what we're looking at, I don't know what the underground will be in the future. What we're looking at with our deposits, they're very large deposits. You're not really chasing around one particular vein. The entire intrusive is mineralized. So the geometry is such that it's like a big blob sitting in the ground, like a big ellipsoidal zeppelin shape. And what that makes is ideal economics, so that your strip ratio is very low, approaching zero. So basically everything you dig up is some kind of pay dirt, whether it be high grade, low grade, and that makes for ideal economics. And these type of deposits, if you look at our peers, it allows you to mine at a very low cutoff grade and still make money, because it's right on the surface. Decades of mine life, a 20, 30 year mine life on some of these things. So very long mine life. So that's just at one deposit, Corbel, that we see. And we'll be out there for 50, 60 years, probably, once RPM comes online and some of these other ones.
Wow, that's very interesting, very intriguing stuff. Never thought I'd be talking about this. It's really neat, especially when you talk about when you find these deposits, especially the ones that you found, right? You said it's pretty much all right there. So as you're digging, each piece that you're pulling up is potentially profitable versus being underground and chasing it. I guess it's similar to chasing any type of investment. You don't want to sit here and chase after it. You want it to work for you. Yeah, that's a really good find. From a novice's perspective, like somebody that doesn't know too much about this, that's pretty obvious. That's a really good find. Now, how long have you been doing this? When did you get started?
Let's take a brief moment to hear from our show sponsors.
What's going on, Average Joes? We know that managing one account or your entire family's portfolio can be stressful and time-consuming. From building and maintaining spreadsheets, calculating how many new shares and units you need to purchase with your contributions, finding the time to log into your brokerage and make those trades, and annually rebalancing each account. Well, my friends over at Passive came up with a tool that can help you manage all of this in a fraction of time without spreadsheets and manual calculations. Passive is a portfolio management tool that makes it easier for DIY investors to maintain a balanced portfolio and build a passive investment strategy at their online broker. It eliminates the need to use spreadsheets, saves you from having to log into your broker to place trades, and helps you stick to your portfolio's target allocation. Elite users can save even more time by using the one-click trades feature and having Passive execute the required trades on your behalf. All of this can be done from the Passive dashboard for all of your accounts. No more logging in to multiple brokerage accounts. Passive is not a robo-advisor. It won't tell you what you should invest in, so you'll need to decide that for yourself, either through self-education or alongside a financial advisor. To learn more about Passive or to sign up, check out our link below, www.averagejoefinances.com/passive. That's P-A-S-S-I-V with no E. Again, P-A-S-S-I-V with no E. check them out. What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about the podcast editing service that we use for the Average Joe Finances podcast. That is editpods.com. And what I really like about them is it's a subscription-based service, so the prices are fantastic. And not only do they do the podcast episodes for us, but they also make us videos, audiograms, social media caption videos. They do our show notes, thumbnails. It's just fantastic products. Go check them out at editpods.com.
Let's get back to today's episode.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Oh, I've been doing this for almost 30 years. I would have started working up here as a young geologist in Alaska up there near Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. It would have been like early 90s. And then I went to Australia. And like I said, I've been all around the world. And I finally managed to come home, which is great. Because this is where I want to raise my kids. This is where I want to be. So it's been just a fantastic experience. When I was going to school to be, when I first took my first geology course, I remember my professor there, Geology 101. He's like, "All right, welcome to Geology 101. This is your passport to the world." And it certainly has been, man. I've just been off the beaten path. I've been in places where there is no path. For your listeners that perhaps are looking for a career path, or they have kids or whatever, have a look at that. There's some very exciting trades. We can't find diesel mechanics in the business. Call them all the, what was that guy? Mike Rowe, right? The dirty jobs, man. We got those kind of job galore, entry level, 100 grand. You just can't find people. And then for the more professional jobs like geologists, mining engineers, metallurgists, process engineers, these are great professions. And you might lead your kids to that. It's a great profession because there's a good inside-outside component, especially in the economic geology business. On the rainy, cold day, there's always plenty of office work to be done and modeling and analyzing the data. And on the beautiful days, there's no shortage of work to be done in the field. And so if you like that kind of mix and choose your own adventure, I just kind of throw that out there that people should really look at the mining business for a career path. And don't think mining's that. A lot of people go, "I'm from New York. We don't use too much mining here." It's like, where do you think all this stuff goes? All this stuff goes there. And with this whole green energy revolution, that how are you going to do that? You need silver for solar panels. You need lithium, copper, cobalt, and what else for these EV cars? The mining is only going to increase. So these are the type of jobs that are very highly sought after. Not a lot of people go for them because they just don't know. They don't appreciate them. And it's definitely, I've had a wonderful career just seeing the world and this, that. I recommend it to anybody.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Just what, especially 30 years of doing this. So you've been doing this for a while, right? So it, being in this trade, what is something that you've learned that you wish you knew when you first started?
Something that I've learned that I wished I knew when I first started. I wished I appreciated more. We were talking about investing. I wish I appreciated the monetary aspect of gold. I've been mainly focused on gold and copper. I didn't educate myself about the monetary metals of gold before. I was just a young geologist. I was investing in the stock market and this and that. It was a dot-com boom back in those days. And it's funny how all the gold bugs are the old guys. They've all been burnt. And I wish I would have appreciated the monetary aspect and how it's real money much more back then. I kind of knew it, but I didn't appreciate it. And I would have been stacking gold and silver a lot earlier. That's for sure. Because I was around it all the time, and I would have been stacking it rather than getting burned in the market over and over through dot-coms and GCFs or whatever.
Yeah. So speaking of gold as an investment, so how do you feel about investing in mineral explorers, right? In general, do you feel like that's a safe bet? And what kind of returns do investors normally see?
I think we're going back to real money here, Mike. I think we're going back to real things, let's just call it, in terms of investments. We just talked about the markets and stuff. It's crazy out there. They're just printing this thing into oblivion. We're over here, they're talking about, on that side of the pond over there in China, they're talking about what's the thing, Evergrande real estate collapses. Over here, they're talking about debt ceilings, that. You know, I've chosen at this stage, I'm getting out of all that. I'm going back to real stuff. I'm talking about gold, silver. That's an insurance policy. And so you should look at gold and silver as an insurance policy. I think it's time to hunker down. It's not a get rich quick scheme necessarily. I think there will be a bit of a bonus on top of the actual being able to preserve your wealth through gold and silver, but other real assets. I'm talking about land. I'm talking about anything real. I'm talking about everybody's a prepper now, Mike. Everybody's a prepper now, right? So real things. You have a generator. You got some spare food, this kind of stuff. And so in terms of an investment, one way to leverage yourself against gold. So when I say get gold and silver, what I mean is the first thing you want to do to insure yourself is actually gold and silver that's allocated or that you hold and buried in your backyard. Yes, I said that. Underneath your mattress, something that you hold. There's no third party a risk to it. And I'm not talking about ETFs and these unallocated things. This stuff has all been hypothecated and rehypothecated. Nobody knows whose it is when it's like a musical chairs game, right? When that whole house of card comes down, you won't get your piece. So that'd be the first thing. Now, to leverage yourself against gold, you could definitely look at the mineral sector. We're talking, there's different minerals. Like I said, we also have a lithium project and that we just spun that company off on the NASDAQ. That's called Snow Lake Resources, LITM. On the NASDAQ. But in the gold space, absolutely you can leverage yourself. And there's different ways to do it. One, you've heard a bit of the story of Nova Minerals. Have a look. And the leverage with Nova Minerals is we're very undervalued right now. And so it's a growth story. And so there's a re-rate coming. Like I said, the milestones, the data points that are coming out, new resource update now here in the weeks to come for that 6.2 million ounces to increase. Also, there'll be a scoping study released early next year. That's kind of the first level of study to then go on to our feasibility study. So we're looking to be able to produce out here. We'd like to be digging up the first, pouring the first gold around 2025, 2026. And so this is the big growth run-up period in these type of stocks. Before production, the excitement's still there, the anticipation's there, bit of speculation in the market at times when we start up drill programs, especially at RPM when we go back there. So it's a growth story. It's very undervalued compared to what we actually have in the ground. So there's an opportunity there. The intrinsic value of low NOVA is much larger, but there's also some speculation with the ongoing drilling program. So if you're into that, Nova Mineral, definitely have a look at us. Now, in the longer term, if you're looking for dividends, yes, I think Nova Mineral is not at the production stage yet. So we don't have the cash flow from production, but there's other mining companies. And if you want to go and stay with us on our journey all the way to that point and get your gains through growth now and value, have a look at us. But there's mining stocks out there. You got your Newmonts, your Barricks and that. These will be solid dividend. These will be solid dividend producers. And nobody talks about dividends anymore, right? It's like, oh, nobody needs to make any profit. Why does the company need to make profit? I think that's okay when it's happening, but I think we're coming to an end when things are going to go back to true fundamentals, dividends, actual real assets, and things like that. So the gold space, that's what I know about the gold space. The mineral sector is huge. There's copper, base metals, industrial metals, all kinds of things like that. But I'll just keep it to, in the interest of time, I'll just keep it to the gold space.
Yeah, for sure. No, I like that though, especially with, because when it comes to me, I call stocks and things like that paper assets. So when it comes to paper assets, for me, I like dividends. I like dividend paying stocks. I feel like that's super important because it's something that is now like a passive cash flow for me. It was something that I've invested in that can grow and they have been growing, but at the same time, it's paying me monthly, bi-monthly, yeah, or quarterly, depending on when they pay out. So stuff like that is super important. But one of the key things that you're talking about here that I really like is you're talking about, you want to have something tangible. You want to have when you're talking about these real assets, when you're talking about gold and silver, lithium, all these different minerals that you're talking about, but even like you said, land. And that's why I like real estate a lot too. Not so much for the fact that, yeah, you have rental properties and everything like that, but it's also the land. That land, you own that piece of land. So it's super awesome when you talk about some type of real asset and it's something tangible, it's something you can touch, right? Now, so as we go into this, actually, there's something else I want to ask you about, just because you had mentioned about printing money and everything with how we're going and just some of the things that causes, right, with inflation. So the way we've been doing it, I think I just saw something yesterday that we're up to 6.8% this month, which is absolutely insane. What's being publicly admitted to. So basically, we're saying, you know, hey, if you're not getting at least a 6.8% return on your investment, you're losing money. That's just the way things are right now. So when you look at that, and then you look at something real like gold that has that value that you can hedge against inflation, it's, you know, those are the kind of things that we're talking about. But with that being said, there's been so much that's happened over the past years that affects us, the pandemic being one of those things. So what do you think the future of gold investing is, and what have the effects of the pandemic, what have they had on the industry itself?
I just want to comment first on some of that stuff you said. They're very, very interesting.
For sure.
6.8% inflation that they admit to. and that they're now about to recalculate how they calculate the inflation number again. And there's an interesting guy. It's John Williams Shadow Stats, and he actually takes how you can, we used to calculate it back in the 80s and 6.8%. It's actually, if you use it the way we used to calculate it back in the 80s, it's actually twice that or more. It's actually twice that or more. And at the end of the day, use your intuition. You know what, you know, on the shelves, they'll report these numbers, but you see what you see all around you. That's the intuition. Trust your eyes, right? Trust your eyes and what you actually see with that type of stuff. So now with COVID, so Alaska's been, it hasn't, the main way it's affected us is these supply chain disruptions. It's just getting worse and worse. That's the main thing. In terms of work stoppages, no. Alaska's been, I don't know, call it the Swedish model, call it the Florida model. We haven't really done that here. I have to look around and read the news about some of the other places and all these shutdowns is just crazy. We're naturally about 6 miles apart anyway up here. So the 6 foot's a bit of a joke, but we haven't had any of that up here. Work's been going non-spot a little bit in the beginning, like early spring 2020, when everybody was looking around, didn't know what was going on. But yeah, we haven't had any kind of lockdowns or restrictions on movement, or I mean, they can try it, but I don't know if it'll work around here. But so yeah, so that hasn't. Interestingly, the first time we've ever had guys have some additions, stay home and not go out to work, is ever since this, they started giving, people started taking the shot, right? Before that, nobody had a problem at all. I don't know. I'll just throw that out there. It's been strange. It hasn't really affected us, and it's full steam ahead. The main thing is supply chain issues. We use all kinds of consumables, anything from bags to saw blades to lumber. That's been another one. Lumber, the prices on lumber are going up. I can see the inflation on lumber. You can tell me 6.8%.
That's been
look at lumber, it's much more than that. I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah, that's been hitting everybody hard, especially in real estate. That's kind of where my forte is, in bread and butter. So the supply chain shortages have been detrimental to just about every industry out there. So yeah, definitely feeling that.
And you just got to plan way ahead. I've ordered things now that are 9 to 12 months out. Usually you just call and in 2 or 3 weeks, they put it on the barge from wherever it's coming down south and up, it's here in 2 or 3 weeks, but now 9 to 12 months out. So we're having to think ahead, going, you know, this part or this machine's starting to wear down. I better get another one because it might not get here in a year. And if I don't have one, it's going to shut me down. So there's a lot of that kind of forward planning required. I think that Mike, the times of the just-in-time supply system is over. That's game over, I think. That was nice while it lasted. But I think just in time is kind of over. And people got to start having inventory in place. You got to have parts inventory and start doing it the way they used to do it pre-1960 or 70, whenever that just in time came in, because supply chains are breaking down. It's just takes some adjusting. We'll get there. We can start making some more things closer to home.
Yeah, I feel like it's been like a long time coming with the supply chain issue. It wasn't COVID that did it. COVID's just what pushed it over the edge. So it's been leading up to this for at least 2 decades now at this point. And when you think about the fact that you pretty much had to change your thought process on how you're ordering your supplies and just everything. So you change your mindset around it, which is fantastic. That is the right way to look at things, no matter what industry you're in, is that to be able to think ahead and get ahead of the problem. That's how you win, right? That's how you either beat out your competitors, or that's how you continue to be able to do what you're doing and not lose your own business. With you being a business owner, with everything that you're doing some huge things, man. And it's just really awesome. Do you have a favorite business related book or podcast that you listen to?
Oh, all these kind of things that we talk about. The podcast that I listen to personally. Oh, here's some people I like to listen to, and I think make a lot of sense. People like Peter Schiff, people like Rob Kirby. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm missing some of my favorites here. People like David Morgan. People like that. In terms of, this is a finance show, an investment show, and so those are the kind of people that I listen to that make a lot of sense to me. Those guys, yeah. For sure. And as a few, Chris Martinson, those type of people. There's another one recently that I heard, a guy named John Perez. It's a new one. He's kind of new on my radar. John Perez. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
No, all great recommendations. Definitely appreciate that. Now, we've talked, it's still foreign language to me, but I think I learned a lot having this conversation with you. I definitely got a whole page of awesome notes here. And for my listeners that are listening and they're interested in, hey, I want to maybe potentially invest in the gold mining industry, right? Because that's what you do, right? It's not necessarily investing in gold itself, but investing in the gold mining industry. But you also said to, hey, buy these real assets, right? Buy actual pieces of gold that you can bury in your backyard, which is pretty cool. Where can people find more information about you and Nova Minerals and the projects that you're working on, like Estelle Gold Camp and different things like that? So where can people find you? Can you share your website with us, social media, anything like that?
So yeah, our website, that would be the one-stop shop, novaminerals.com.au. So Australian domain name. We're on, I don't personally do the, my other fellow director does the Twitter, but yeah, Nova Minerals on Twitter. I think he's doing, Twitter. Twitter's the main one. And you can go and you sign up on our mail list and everything on the website. Also, there's, if you go to YouTube and type in Nova Minerals, I've done some not interesting shows like this, but more like just 5-minute kind of news shows. We give updates on kind of financial news shows that are just like 5-8 minutes long, just to kind of give the latest update. There's a lot of that going on there. We're listed in the ASX. So we have several listings. Our primary listing is the Australian Stock Exchange, the ASX, under the ticker code NVA. But we're also, for your audience, probably more importantly, on the OTC right now. And the ticker code there is NVAAF, NVAAF on the OTC. And then for any European listeners, we're also in Frankfurt as QM3 is the code, QM3 in Frankfurt. And yeah, so we're a publicly traded company. You can get us in all the, on all those exchanges and come join us on our journey. Like I said, there's a major re-rate happening. I think that gold itself is going to do big things. I think if you look, just as a final note, if you see what Bitcoin's done, we were talking about crypto earlier before we started. If you see what Bitcoin's done, I think that reflects what gold should be doing if it wasn't so manipulated by these paper markets. So there's a lot of futures contracts and they trade way more paper gold than there actually exists physical gold. That's a whole show in itself we could talk about. But if gold wasn't manipulated, but it's like a spring, right? The more you twist it up and push it down, eventually this thing's going to blow. And you want to be on the right side of that trade, holding your physical portion as well as some other leverage assets like your stocks and things like that. Yeah, so that's how you could look at. I think there's going to be a re-rate in the gold price as well as in Nova Minerals is a good company to put on your radar to consider for what I believe is coming. And either way, exciting things ahead with all our drilling and as we push these projects forward on our path to production.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I like the analogy too of the spring. You want to be on the right side of that thing because when it takes off, it's going to launch. So you want to make sure you're going up with it. So really awesome stuff, Chris. And I really feel like I learned a lot here. Like I said, I got some really good notes. This conversation was awesome, informative. And for somebody that's looking at this, they can hopefully after listening to this, make a pretty educated decision on before going into investing in something like into this industry, they probably can get a better understanding. So we'll make sure we have your links in the show notes and people, hey, go check out Chris and what Nova Minerals is doing. Go look them up on YouTube, go check out their website, go sign up for their mailing list and get more information. Because like I said, this right here, we're just scratching the surface here. You want to get down in that pit like we were talking about and see all the gold that's all around you. Yeah, I'm going to do a play on words there too. So.
Just getting started here. The best is yet to come.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. And I really appreciate you taking some time on a Saturday chat with me. And fun fact here for my listeners that I'm in Hawaii and he's in Alaska, but where he's at in Alaska, he's only 1 hour ahead of me. So this has been one of the closer time zones that I've been able to do an interview with. Right. So it's pretty awesome to do that. So
Mike, Hawaii is that's our holiday destination in Alaska. Yeah. They got all these special deals. Go to Hawaii 4 nights, 5 nights or whatever for $300. It's crazy.
Absolutely. Hey, if you ever come out here, hit me up for sure. We'll go out and grab a coffee or grab a beer or something and talk a little bit more in depth about this stuff. It's definitely very fascinating. You gave some great recommendations too for people to look at different podcasts. All in all, just a great wealth of information. And I really appreciate you taking time today and chat with me.
Thanks for having us, Mike. And I look forward to us doing this again.
Yeah, for sure. Aloha. Thank you for making it to the end of this episode. Greatly appreciate you being here with me today on the Average Joe Finances podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make this the episode that you go leave us a 5-star rating or subscribe to our YouTube channel. The Average Joe Finances podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Have an outstanding day.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.